I'd like to start with a little bit of my experience, personal experience in basically in a war zone. And to give it a context that in some way or other we're all in a war zone. Just many of us fortunate that it's not hot violence, but there is a sense of insecurity and instability in the world right now, wherever we are. So in this village where I am, to very close to the Lebanese border, we've had nearly 2 years of, as I said, rockets coming over and interceptors coming up to intercept them, and artillery fire going, and every day many, many of those bangs and booms. And I have to say that all the teachings of equanimity that I've practiced and taught in my life were totally needed. And what ha really helped me to stay steady is just to confirm the relationship with life, which is bigger than the conflict between people. Their sense of I didn't leave. I was going around feeding the animals of young families that left their houses. I was with my chickens and with my garden and in nature, walking through the trees. And that was really important. There was one period quite after October the 7th when I felt on the edge of a sort of a down. And I didn't quite understand why. It wasn't the violence itself. I began to realize that I was lonely. And lonely because the language, the we language, the us, we are right, we are this, we are that, the language of we was so strong in the whole society that I felt quite out on the edge. And in the end, I worked with it and decided that what I needed to do was have my voice out there. And if any of us feel we're isolated, we're lost, the we language is so strong that the Trump language or the anti-Trump language or the this language or the society, that we don't find our home maybe in strong views, then maybe that's a lesson that when we find our voice, we come back to something, to we found out, we find our power again. So all of us need, in a way, to find our voice. And second thing, the Dharma community in Israel, and to some extent Palestine — there isn't a big Dharma community in Palestine, but there is. But the Dharma community in Israel was very engaged and very connected and very helping, immediate helping, and still are. And just a small example, after October the 7th, for 3 months, the Dharma community — that's the Tovana, the organization that I founded and I work with — 3 times a day for 3 months, there was a system where there was a Zoom room open where there was teachers that would give support and discussion and meditation and dialogue to anybody on any side. That was 3 times a day for 3 months, which is an extraordinary kind of effort if you think about it. But it was the Dharma community is very, very active. And not at all easy. If you can imagine what happens in a retreat with soldiers who come from battle, basically, and sit on a retreat, and what happens? They bring the traumas and bring the tears and bring the guilt and bring the whole story. So it's a very it's very, I would say, powerful. And one thing that came out of my own conclusion as I say, to find my voice personally, was that we all need help. We can't do this on our own. Sangha is help. My commitment to gardening and to being nature and to look after animals was first aid, because we are sensitive, conditioned beings, and the quantity of pain that we can sometimes feel around us can be just too much. We can't handle it on our own. So it's well worth remembering that we need help, we need some first aid when things get really difficult. And one of those aspects of first aid is to be very careful what comes in to the mind. In other words, be aware of how our attention is stolen. And it can be the media, it can be the telephones, it can be other people, it can be views, strong views, it can be the passion of in get caught up in things. But just be careful. Our attention gets taken over, and we feel swept away. And in some way or other, we need to bring the attention back to ourselves, to what's important for us, to remember what's important. And the word that I like from the Pali is viveka. Viveka is a word meaning renunciation, meaning renounce the overwhelming daily life stuff coming in. In other words, find spaces. The Buddha used it, by the way, for his monks. He said, "Viveka," meaning just sit under trees, leave the craziness of village life, and come and sit under trees with me. So it's that sense of stepping out, and at the same time being clear of what's important. Viveka, what's important. So first aid can include restoring our connection to our trust in life, being in nature, being with our grandchildren, our friends, our love, wherever we find love, walking by the sea. I remember I had some great walks with Shaila when I was in San Jose, and we used to walk by the sea together. It can be feeding others. It can be humanitarian help. Right now, it's what's needed. First aid, humanitarian help. And it can help us and others as well. So that's an aspect that we have to remember. And Sangha is so important that we get help with, that we help each other with this. At the same time, we're going to be affected by the situation in many, many ways. We're going to feel confusion or anxiety or helplessness, that we can't change things, or we can't change things as much as we want. There's only little me faced with whatever, Trump or Netanyahu or uncontrollable tsunami of violence that we can't stop. We're going to feel all kinds of feelings. We can feel blame and guilt. It's just very, very human. At this time, a lot of people come and say, "I can't meditate. I used to be able to meditate, but things are too disturbing. I feel too agitated and restless. I can't meditate." And it's basically the emotional life which is underneath. And I think that what we need to say is that is part of the picture, and our responsibility here is to actually allow those voices in us of confusion or concern or feeling a bit lost or helpless, to allow them to be with them, to listen to them, to be like the mother and there are our crying child inside. It's okay. But to know them fully as feelings and not as the truth of things. They are the truth is that that's a feeling that we feel right now. But it doesn't need to, we don't need to take it further and give it truth. For example, the feeling of helplessness. I'm going to tell you a small story. My granddaughter, at the age of 14, was really upset about global warming and the climate change. And she just was really unhappy. And she said, adults are destroying this world, this beautiful world, this beautiful planet. Last year, I spoke to her about it again, and she was pretty happy. I said, you're okay with, you're happy, even climate change. She said, yes, yes. And the reason is life is wiser than we are. So life will carry on in one way or another. I trust life. It's more intelligent than human beings. Very sweet comment. But why I say that, we can feel, it's totally okay to feel the confusion and the helplessness and even the blame and the guilt and the agitation in these days. But just as feelings that come and go, we don't need to give them a kind of control on us to be the boss of our life. We feel helpless. Okay, that's a feeling. Then we get up in the morning and say, okay, I feel helpless, but this is what I can do. This is what I can do. I have to say a personal story. I spent a week just now writing an article for a British journal magazine called The Ecologist. And it wasn't easy. They wanted me to write an article about the Gaza war and what's going on now. And I kept finding that I was falling into this trap or another trap. It was so difficult to write the article. In the end, I finished it and I sent it 2,000 words. And the editor wrote back and said, it's a very powerful piece. And I began to cry. And the reason is I felt, this is what I can do right now. There was an opportunity, a call, an invitation. It just happened to arrive. And I wrote and I responded. I listened to the call. I did, made a big effort. It wasn't easy at all. It took a whole week. And then all of a sudden, it sort of worked. And this is what I can do. I can't get rid of Netanyahu. I can't stop the killing in Gaza right now. I can't stop Israeli soldiers going there and Israeli soldiers also getting killed. I can't stop that. But this is what I can do. And I did. I answered the call. And it sort of, I think it, the emotion I felt was some relief. This is what I can do. And I think all of us can take that home and say, we can't solve the problems of the world. I have a YouTube. If you look at my channel on YouTube, there is a talk. If you look up Stephen Fuller channel, there's a talk that I just recorded. And it's called, Samsara is not fixable. We can't fix the universe, just like my granddaughter said about climate change. We can't control, but we can contribute. We can offer what we can. So it's a talk, a half an hour talk on YouTube called Samsara is Not Fixable. And it's quite recent. I think I put it up there 10 days ago. So one other thing I want to mention that's really about practice. Practice isn't entering a kind of a nice, comfortable space called mindfulness. It's not like that. Like I said, do experience all the difficulties and the mess of our life. And our mindfulness is about allowing it to touch us, in allowing it to open all the doors. So it's important that we actually know how mindfulness is a way of deeply seeing who we are, rather than a technique of being a bit more aware, which is super important. But it's the original translation of sati, mindfulness, is remembering. And sometimes people say to me, I don't know how to act. If someone comes at me with a gun, how do I know what to do? Do I kill them? Do I not? Will I allow them to kill me? What do I do? Oh, and that's a dramatic example, but I've been getting that from people. Or they ask me the same question myself, what would you do? But they're very much, people say, how do I act in these days? And I think it's a question to all of us that we need to ask, how do I act? What's my responsibility at this time? And it's not an easy question. There's ethical dilemmas. What do I do? Do I go out and against injustice and against racism and against right-wing kind of aggression? What do I do? And there's a basic answer coming from the Dharma, which is remember who we are. Come back to our big self. Come back to, we're all big people. Think of what we've been through in our life. Think of all the years of books we've read and meditations we've done and teachers we've heard. And we learn from our children and our dogs and our cats, and we learn from the trees, we learn from our teachers, we learn from our body, we learn all the time. Where is all that learning? It's there. And so sati is remembering our big self. And that's the answer, because nobody's going to tell you, in this situation, you have to do that. The Buddha couldn't say that. There may be some red lines, by the way, in extreme situations, indeed. But the answer is, your point of reference is your wise mind and heart. From there, trust you'll do the best you can. That's your point of reference. So our responsibility is to come back to our wise mind and heart. And that's where meditation is really helpful in developing clarity, presence, a big mind, a big heart. And then we'll trust that with that, we go out in the world. And we don't know. We can't say what's the right. We're never going to know what's the perfect action. There's no protocol that says you have to do this when faced with, I don't know, media. So mindfulness has a very, very important role in reminding us of our big self. And that's what will help us go out in the world. So it's not about samadhi. Mindfulness in this case is not a samadhi. Samadhi, samatha, samadhi is important in mindfulness, but it's not enough. Because samadhi is the power of concentration, the power of focus, the power of deep quiet, which we all need. But if we want to really know how to cope and go out in the world and be guided, we need a lot more than samadhi. The Buddha said, be an island to yourself, 3 days before he died. Be an island in the stormy seas. From the image It's clear he didn't mean cut yourself off, go into a five-star hotel, shut the door, and said, watch Netflix. I'm in an island. The world can go hang. I don't mean you could never do that. Sometimes you really need to do that to take a break. It's okay. It's all right. I see you, Ram, you're smiling about that. Yeah, sometimes we need to allow ourselves to take a break. It's all right. And samadhi, in a way, is a break. It's quiet. It's just, you know, walking through the trees is not an escape. It's quiet. But the Buddha said, be an island means that you are, because you are a sense of being an island to yourself. The way to do that is to see the truth of your inner experience as it appears. So this breath is a truth of things. This body and the life force that we touch and that we listen to is the truth of things. That's a ground. That is a ground on which we stand. And it's like being an island. It's the basis of equanimity. Something feels difficult, like we feel afraid, what's going to happen. That fear, if we're with the truth of that fear, we are back to being steady. I'm with the truth of my fear. It's not the end of the world. It's an honest response to the difficulties that I see, and the truth of this moment. I'm with it. I can be with it. I allow it. So that gives us steadiness. It's where Tara Brach's language of radical acceptance is important. Allowing things to be the way they are right now, the truth of things as they are, I'm not going to cover them over or dress them up or hide them or deny them. And if we allow that, we're back to steadiness. We're back to being an island. And it's really important because these days we can easily feel, as I say, swept away. And we can get lost with anxieties and fears and what will happen and what might happen. And instead of that, we need to be an island. And we can go out and demonstrate and do political action. We can do social action. We can do unusual things. We can have our voice out there. But we need to stand our ground to be an island. And that's because that's the truth of things. So I want to give an example of violence. When I ask people, why are you supporting sending these your children to Gaza as soldiers? And you see what's happening there. Why do you support that? And people do. And they say, well, we're protecting. We want to make our world. We want to be secure. So there's no other way to be secure. So there is a question there. There is a fear of security, protection, fair enough. There's a fear. But it's translated, if I do this, then I will be secure. So fear, when it goes to becoming a victim, for example, or fear when it becomes a story, a sankhara, I will be secure when they aren't there. I will be secure when we smash them over there. I'll be secure if we invade or bomb Iran. Then we'll feel secure. And you can see the illusion in that, because there's been much less security now than any time before. There's much less security in this whole area. And so choosing the story, going into the story based on emotion instead of just allowing the emotion to be there and say, yes, there is an emotion of fear, but I'm with that. I can handle it. I don't need to go from there to create narratives and stories that create violence and karma, if you like. So give space to feelings, but that's what we can do. Give space to our feelings, but we don't need to build out of them story, blame, it's them. We're against Palestinians, we're against Israelis, we're against Jews, we're against that side or the other side. That story, and it just doesn't help. And we have to be really careful not to do that ourselves. It's very easy. Any of us, we can blame them, we can blame this, we can say it's them. But actually, wait a minute, are we just making stories out of our narratives, out of our fears and insecurity? So let the fear, let us be with the fear and insecurity. The Buddha said, then you'll be an island. You'll be okay. There is fear. Yes, I'm a human being and there's some fear. Okay, here it is. In Hebrew, you say, shalom, fear. And insecurity, shalom, and lehitraot, meaning I see you, fear, and goodbye. You don't have to, after that, go and make big military campaigns. And it goes deeper, because if we are close to the truth of feelings, they open us to the world. They become liberating. There was a teacher that came to teach in our Sangha some time back. And he was teaching from the Tibetan non-dual tradition. And there was a nice image from the Tibetan non-dual teaching of Mahamudra. Emotions like anger are like a jewel in the mouth of a snake. We have to snatch the jewel quickly before the snake bites us. What does that mean? If we snatch the jewel, we know the anger, we feel the anger, we feel its energy, but we don't let it grow and take over. Then we've got the jewel of anger, which is response, which is energy, which is fire. Okay, maybe it can help us, but we're not bitten by the snake. It's just a nice image, and it's very much part of work with emotions. I remember a story, a Zen story, about this, where a Zen student was knocking at the, every morning was knocking at the door of his teacher. And one morning, he knocked at the door of his teacher and the teacher didn't open it. So he knocked again and the teacher didn't open the door. And he knocked again and the teacher didn't open the door. And he began to get frustrated. Why is the teacher not opening the door? Every morning, teacher opens the door and gives me some teaching. So he knocked one more time and the teacher opened the door and then slammed it in his face. And then opened the door again and said, now watch your anger. And at that moment, the student was liberated. Anger is a fire, like other experiences. Emotions are not a problem. They can be a fire. They can show us things. They're layers. Feelings are layers. And it's our sensitivity to the world. Our emotions come back to our basic goodness in our heart. We all have compassion, and our emotions come from that place. I'm going to go and quieten the dog in a minute. Maybe it doesn't matter. The dog is giving a Dharma talk also. In the dog language, the dog wants to be heard. But feelings, if we allow them to be less personal, my anger or my fear or my anxiety or my worry or rage, as soon as we allow them to be less personal, then they open us to the world. And it's very important. The Buddha said, I was awakened through the practice of yoniso manasikaram. And yoniso manasikaram is a kind of awareness that is female, that is awareness that is a wise heart, not just analytic awareness or awareness that chops things into pieces. It's an awareness that is inclusive, like it's a mothering awareness. And so awareness will always touch the heart because our heart is always talking and is connecting us to the world. On one retreat last year, there was a woman in a group, and she was crying. I said, why are you crying? And she said, because I was sitting 20 minutes watching an ant, and the ant was struggling to bring a small stick into its nest, and it couldn't because the stick was too big. And it was 20 minutes or 15 minutes I was watching the ant struggling to bring this stick into the nest. And it's such a, for me, touched me so deeply. And I was thinking, well, this is a retreat. If you tell this story out of a retreat, people will send you off to a mental hospital. But it's the caring, the mothering that we have in all of us. And it is part of our feeling life. We are, it is part of. And so we need to allow feelings, even if they're difficult ones, and allow them to be seen and to be held. And allow them to touch the heart. So a few points about, if you like, the Buddha nature. The big picture. We're not in charge of things, but the big picture that we feel, which can be karma, which can be the Buddha mind in us, the awareness, the open awareness that we feel, can be the sense that there's a bigger world, a mystery around there. It can be at our back. It can really help us when we have to act in the world. I was the other day, it was actually nearly a year ago, I was standing with somebody and we were looking at the sky, and all of a sudden two rockets shot up between us and the sky. And both my friend and myself, we looked at each other and we both agreed. The sky doesn't care about human greed, hate, and delusion. The sky doesn't care. The sky doesn't care if there's rockets going up. It was such a kind of picture of something that's so, in a way, big. And I think we do need that as a place, that, a point of view of life. It will really help us when we go out into the world and struggle with things that we feel are so difficult and painful. But somewhere at the back, just a bit like my granddaughter was saying, in the end, we have to trust life. Life is wiser than us. So the sky, we have to trust the sky. We have to trust the earth under our feet. We have to trust something bigger than us, than the me that is trying to make sense of things. And I do think that it's really, really important that we don't sort of put aside the big picture, the more universal picture, but we allow it to be there as a kind of support for us when we try and help ourselves and others. We did lots and lots of peace walks in the Middle East, and Palestinians and Israelis. And by the way, I just have to share a small story about that, because I wrote it in this article about sides. I remember one peace walk with about 300 or 400 people, Palestinians and Israelis, and some people from abroad. And we were walking from a Palestinian village called Barta to the separation wall. The Palestinians said, the especially young Palestinians said, "We have to wave the Palestinian, we walk behind the Palestinian flag." They started to unroll their Palestinian flags. So a few of us said, "We're not walking behind a Palestinian flag. I'm sorry." So they said, "Well, will you walk behind an Israeli flag?" "No, we don't want to walk behind any flag. We're not ready for flags. This is not the way peace is made." So the Palestinian young folk were, they just didn't understand it. So we went to the elders. And here we are, elders. Here I am, an elder, the role of elders. But we went to the Palestinian elders, and they told the young people, "Look, just let it go. If you want to walk behind a color, use the color white." And they said to us, "Why do you like the color white?" And our response was, "Because the color white is the color of bandages to heal our wounds." And I remember even the Palestinian young people really got it, the ones that wanted a Palestinian flag. And it was a very special walk, I must say. But it's important that we embody something, no sides. It doesn't help. It hasn't helped in making peace for the 80 years in this part of the world. Instead of that, embody the peace that we want to see. Be the peace we want to see. So the peace walks were being the peace, were showing what it's like, were sowing seeds of peace. This way, one seed at a time, one small seed. And it's I think that that is the invitation from Dharma, to embody, to express the peace we want to see by the way we are, and not by getting lost in sides and them and us and Final word, we'll all make mistakes. We will get it wrong. We will do our best. It's okay. We're not perfect. Things will happen. We'll say the wrong thing. We will feel shame or disappointment, as we go out in the world and try and, help others and help ourselves. It's okay. But if we have that sense that we have a refuge in our practice, and we have a sense of support from the Dharma, from the community, from ourselves, from our journey in life, then that's what we do the best we can, and that's it. We can't do more than that. And it's kind of important to allow ourselves not to be perfect, but to say, this is what I can contribute right now. The word dana is an important word here. It's not just giving dana as money, food, whatever. It's actually giving our life. Dana is giving. We received our life as dana, so we give our life as dana to help the world, whatever we can, to reduce suffering. Okay, so that's the few things that I wanted to say. It's quarter past, Where I am, quarter past nine in the evening. It's quarter past 11 your time, correct? Yeah. So maybe we'll actually, before we have questions, maybe we'll take a small break, because we've been, nearly 2 hours sitting here. Let's take a break and come back in at half past 11, and then we'll have happily we'll have some questions, and you time also to think of questions that are coming up for you. Okay, thank you. We're back. Before we go any further, I do want to introduce Erez. Erez, wave your hand. Erez is helping me with the giving sessions like this one exactly, and is helping me in different ways, and I hope we can do more things like this, and I have more sessions planned in California and so on, this time online, because I just don't feel I have the energy to go and do another tour physically with all the logistics involved in that. So this one is online, but it's similar to the one I did in 6 years ago, to many, many sanghas, Spirit Rock and so on, all over West Coast and the East Coast. Anyway, I just want to sort of say that thank you to Erez that's helping me with all of these. And maybe, Ram, another technical thing is perhaps in the chat you could put the link for my website and also the name of the book, How to Thrive in Hard Times. Maybe that can be in the chat. And in my website, by the way, there's a button for donations for Dana. And I've given also the link to Ram that maybe that can go up there as well at some point, the actual PayPal link. But I'll mention that towards the end. So anyone would like to ask something, anything coming up, I'd be happy to respond in any way I can.
I'm not even sure what I want to say, because I know we all are feeling this kind of overwhelm. And I think one of the things I want to say is, because of having many years of practice, I am so grateful for this practice at this time, because for me it is proving itself, to help me stay grounded. I feel that I personally am okay, and that I can take in the suffering. People often will say to me, "Oh, I don't want to listen to any news. I don't want to hear any of that stuff. It's depressing and all that." And I don't go searching for news, but I keep up, and I have learned to be careful and not enhance the hard feelings of news by, say, watching some murder story, fictional, as amusement. I have learned to be careful and to filter what I can do, and to keep silence at times when I don't need any electronic enhancement of what's going on. So I'm just wanting to express my appreciation that this is a practice that works. If I were living where you're living, I don't know if it would work for me, but in my life, it's working for me, and that's all I could say right now. So I wanted to share that it's the practice is worth what it takes to learn it and to do it and to keep it going.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I do know from previous meetings that you've been a real old timer in the Dharma, and it does take time. I would say that the change of view from a regular point of view, which is life is a struggle, and almost like it's hopeless, but the view that it's all workable, that the Dharma gives a bigger view of reality in which we have our place and we can actually have a good life in despite, we can live well and fully despite all the disasters around. And that does take time and practice. So I do appreciate your comment and your appreciation. It's very precious to all of us, and it helps us to keep going. Actually, the Buddha didn't say you have to get enlightened tomorrow. One of the classic quotes of the Buddha, it was, "Bend your mind to awakening," which much softer. It's meaning awakening is your compass, but you can't expect fruit tomorrow. Just have that, and that's enough, actually, in my own experience, to have the Dharma as a compass is enough. You let go into, you go on the journey, it takes you. So appreciate what you're saying or what you said to all of us. Thank you. Yeah, anybody.
I just really want to thank you for one of many things you've said, but the one that really sticks in my mind is the idea of the white flag.
Message.
You may or may not know, but in Los Angeles, when the protests began because of the horrendous ICE raids and the masked men taking people into cars and things like that, many of the Hispanic community and Mexican community were raising Mexican flags, I understand their loyalty and their sense of purpose and all of that, but the idea of doing it as a white flag would just diminish all of that nastiness that resulted from other people and just put it into a unifying force. And so I hope somehow that message, if at all, can be brought here to this country, because that really just would minimize some of the hate, not all of it, but just minimize it. Because that's what we're talking about. It's not the same as it's not the same as killing the killings that are going on in Gaza, certainly, but we're in a dictatorship now. So we do not have democracy in this country. And we're just hanging on by a thread. So I appreciate that, and I wanted to ask, thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. We're in a dictatorship too, where we are. And I think we need to kind of see it in the perspective that a very important teaching that the Buddha talked about it as being the number one understanding of Dharma is paticca-samuppada. And paticca-samuppada is dependent origination. And it basically says that the causes and conditions that create this moment are not understandable in any linear sense by our mind. We are not going to be able to give causes. It's because of that, that's that. It's always bigger than that. So even the dictatorship that you are experiencing and we're experiencing, you can look under it and you can find so many causes and then causes from them and then conditions that create that and conditions. The whole thing is a really a big, big kind of multi-layered ecological system. And because of that, I think symbols like the white flag have their role. It helps us to kind of go out of a minimal way of looking, which is basically not true. It's basically a false. It's not the Palestinian flag isn't going to solve the problem. The Israeli flag isn't going to solve the problem. No, as I said before, the only side that we can take is the side of our humanity. Okay, let's take that side at least. So it is important. It's a symbol. It is a symbol. The white flag is saying, let's go beyond the us and them obsessions that create so much suffering and pain. And we just go out in the world and do that. We just go out in the world and do that as best we can, all of us.
Thinking, and you mentioned the word paticca samuppada, right? And I was during the break, I was commenting to one of my Sangha members here about, I can't even imagine where you are and the whole circumstance. My question is, one of the important links, and they're all important, one of the, I find, critical link in the paticca samuppada is the creation of the being. Right. Can you comment on either you or your Sangha members as Dharma practitioners, what your inner state of mind and heart are living there and experiencing as you are saying in your talk? Yes, these rockets go by, all these shells go by. And it's not just rockets go by, it's the shells go by. These are heart agitating events. But I wanted to know a little bit more about that state, and more specifically, going into that links, if you want to go into that, what is that Buddhist teaching that offers comfort, particularly at that point?
So, the thing about paticca-samuppada is that everything happens in chains and that build up, and you can cut the chain at many, many places. It's not just one place. So, for example, I talked a lot about fear and anger also in my talk. If we see the building of fear because of a rocket going over, we see the way the rocket goes over and we build out of it fear. And then we watch. Yes, fear is very primal. And so it's in the step of contact with the world. The heart is triggered by a rocket. That really doesn't need to do anything. That doesn't actually need to create the wheel of samsara. Fear, if we just allow it, is a spontaneous, it's a vedana, it's a contact creating fear, and if we let it come and go. As soon as we start building out of that story, oh, it's them. Oh, even if it's very justified, it's Netanyahu, it's this, it's them, it's because it's the we're already building story, and then when we build story, we build ourselves. So bhava, the creation of a self, which is a step that you were referring to, is a creation of a view of reality based on me and the world. And the fear doesn't need to go there. We can say there is fear, the rocket passed by, I'm back. And we can be all the time in this sense of original mind and say, I don't need to build anything out of this. It's Of course, it's painful. Of course, there's fear. Of course, there's shock. Of course, we get triggered. But we have to be careful about building out of it stories and issues and a self and narratives and blame, etc. And when we see that happening, we can say, wait a minute, okay, it's still human, it's attachment, but I don't need to go there. I can let that go. I remember there was, you know, when I was triggered at a certain point, I was triggered by the booms and the bangs, and I felt it in my body, just like I said, where the dog was barking, and I was, my body, my nervous system was triggered. It was for a period of time, and I just sat quietly with equanimity for hours to let the space of awareness be bigger than the reactivity, so that the space of awareness doesn't have a label on it called Stephen's fear. It's just awareness. And that really helped to restore equanimity again, and I stopped being triggered. So it's really about seeing the process of Paticca-Samuppada happening in real time, and then at the same time seeing the opposite. What happens when you don't create story? Then there's a freedom inside your actions, your words, the kindness that you can offer to others, even if in difficult circumstances. You're not a, you don't need to invest in story. You're taking a life point of view. That's the opposite of paticca, of samsara. That's the not getting in the construction business. And there is really an appreciation. This moment of life is precious. Here it is. I'm not going to put any labels on it or story on it. There's a sense of deep freedom. And that can really be appreciated in the middle of rockets going over. You can still feel deep freedom. This moment is a moment of life with everything. It seems ridiculous, but it is possible. All I can say, it's certainly possible. If people say to you, the day before yesterday, I was meeting with them, a whole bunch of Dharma teachers that I know, mostly from America. There was James, that some of you know, the teachers, James was there, and forgot his name. Anyway, a whole bunch of Dharma teachers, mostly American. They're mostly like me, a kind of pioneers. And we were all actually laughing like children a bit, say, actually, we're leading a happy life in a very, very difficult circumstances. But still, life is to be lived fully. We can have a happy life even with the rockets going over. It's not a contradiction, because life is bigger than the rockets. And if you kind of really feel, I'm here in this life, we can feel it with the breath, just what the Buddha said. The breath, the body, the energies of life, the joy of being, the dance of things. And it brings a lot of joy. And we can cry when we think of what's going on in Gaza. One is not against the other. Sure.
Margaret mentioned earlier how she chooses to continue to look at the news, which is not pleasant and doesn't make her feel good, but she wants to stay in touch, and she's able to do that. And some people in our Sangha have said they decided just to check out of it. They can't take it anymore, so they listen to it. So my question is, how do you do it when, and I'm going to be specific, when I hear our president, his voice, his comments, it just really annoys me, really deeply gets me upset. So how do I figure out to watch TV when he's constantly there? His voice, whatever story they're covering, his input is there. And I understand he's the president, so they're going to show him. But what do I do so that I can stay knowing what's going on without getting to that point that this person puts me in.
So I think you do need to reduce the dosage. It's a poison. And you be careful not to take too much poison in one go. And you obviously you're going to hear that voice. You're going to hear, it's going, you know, I also read newspapers and so on once a day. I kind of need to see what's going on. But so the first, give a, once, I once heard a talk by a Cambodian monk in the States. He was very old, he was maybe 100 years old. And he said, I can give you the whole of Dharma in three words. Guard the gates.
Guard the gates.
Guard the gates, meaning the gates of the mind. Mm. So what I'm saying to you is don't overdo it with the television. You need to practice viveka, stepping out and saying, it's not healthy, it's a poison. It's doing unhealthy things to my system. Mm-hmm. And say, okay, there's a minimum. I will watch, you know, or I will get the media, whatever, and the minimal, I need to do that, fair enough. But just understand that the stuff you're getting in is sweeping you away, like I said, is stealing your attention. So that's the first thing. Secondly, when you feel triggered, you need to kind of look at the being, at the being triggered process that happens, and ask yourself, actually, it's natural. It's like you hear my dog barking outside when there was a noise. We have wild pigs.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they're running about outside. We're in nature. We have wild pigs, and my dog's barking like crazy at wild pigs. So, you know, maybe there's an analogy there between our presidents and wild pigs. But just like my dog is barking, you are also barking and reacting, and it's natural. So don't blame yourself at all. Don't blame yourself. It's very, very natural. But when you find that you reduce the level of toxic of the poisons that get in the system, then begin to say, I forgive myself if I get triggered now and then. It's all right. And just look at your kind heart that's being triggered. Something in you is saying, I don't want this world like this. That's not a bad voice. It's a voice that you can listen to your heart, but you need to kind of a little bit go further and say, my heart is telling me I want something better. I want a different way of living. I will not. So that's your time to go out and give what you can to others, to go for a walk, to plant your garden, to go and help someone who needs your help, to go and meet a neighbor that otherwise you wouldn't see. I sometimes tell people say, I want to stop this. I want to make peace. And I say, well, okay, you're an Israeli Jew. You have Palestinians in your street. Maybe you go and say hello to them. Start there. Or the same with the Palestinians. Maybe if you can, not pressure, but maybe there's a way of you can step out and make peace in a small area. So my sense is go to goodness. Support the goodness in your heart, whatever it needs. Maybe it's helping sick people. Maybe it's helping yourself. Maybe it's going for walks in nature. I don't know. Maybe it's going to more Sangha meetings and more meditations. But go for goodness. Like, that's my compass. I'm going things that support my good heart. And then the voice of this president out there will simply not be as strong. It's there, just like the wild pigs. It'll be there. We're not going to shut it. It's part of reality, but it doesn't need to undo your joy of life, which is bigger than that voice. Your joy of life is more precious and bigger than that. So go wherever you can to support your basic joy of life and your goodness in your heart. And helping others, by the way, is a very, very good way of doing that.
Thank you. It's okay. I wonder if you could say more about the community that you established. When you were here before, you talked about establishing an intentional community of Jews and Palestinians. And I haven't heard you actually mention that today. I wonder if you could say a little more.
There isn't a community in a sense. We had in our village is now got 1,000 people in it, and I helped to found this village around 40 years ago. And it, in a sense, is an intentional community that's it's an ecological community and so on, and it is very connected to our Druze and Arab neighbors who come all the time, and the kids come and play in the playground and so on. And there's the kindergarten, which is Palestinian and Jewish mixed kindergarten. So that is part of our village, and I think that's maybe what you're referring to. I don't have in mind any other intentional community. But I did talk possibly about Middleway, which is the peace organization that I was leading or helping to establish over years, and the peace walks I mentioned in this morning, and some of the peace activities that we've been doing. It's not an intentional community, though. It's a project, a peace project, and we did it for many, many years, dialogue groups and peace walks and so on with Jews and Arabs, Israelis and Palestinians. So it's not, it's so much an intentional community. So maybe you mean and where I live, which is the village of Klil near the Lebanon and in the Galilee. And in a sense that is intentional, and that it's ecological. We're not connected to the national grid. We don't have electricity from the national grid. We are almost all of us peace oriented. I don't think anybody's really voting right wing in all the adults here in this village. So in that sense, it's maybe that's what I was talking about. I can't remember, of course, 6 years ago.
Well, that sounds very much like what I remembered.
Okay.
I may have used the word intentional.
Well, is there something specific that you wanted to ask about it that I could offer?
Is it continuing? And actually, you've answered that.
Yes. Well, it's amazing to have a village that we started with a few families on wild land. Now is 1,000 people with children and so on. And it is based on private land. In other words, anyone living here has to buy land on the open market. And that's part of our commitment, our intention. We will not live on land that is basically taken from the people living here before. So that was an intention, that we will not live on the land that's taken. It's impossible to do that 100% because all the land is basically taken. So we have that, you know, if you want to build a house, you first have to buy land. So that's also an intentional kind of commitment that we have in, and it makes a difference because local people and local villages very much respect us because of those decisions we made of how to live with our neighbors.
And so
the dana that we contribute would go just to you or to the village, or how would that be?
No, the dana, if you want to contribute dana, it goes to me. It's my dana. giving these presentations and giving this teaching and so on. So the dana will come back to me. I'm not representing the village in any formal way. I'm not a spokesman for the village. I'm not talking about the village. I'm not going out into the world talking about the village. I'm talking Dharma, and it's coming from my teaching. So any dana that arrives is actually coming to me.
Okay. Thank you. It's been a very, I don't know what the word is, more than interesting, a very valuable morning. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Margaret, I have a practice question, kind of following on.
Yes, completely.
What you said about watching TV. And my view of myself lately is I have so much judgment arising so constantly, not just about public figures, but in conversation and when people begin offering their opinions about current affairs, I have judgments about it, and I can feel those judgments just fuming inside myself. Can you offer some ideas about how to be present in this kind of I don't know, just it's a fraught time to be in groups. Because you know how it is. I'm not going to elaborate. Please help.
Yes. I never forget Joseph Goldstein, one of my original teachers, said about the judgmental mind, note it. Give it a note. So you feel the judgmental mind and the critical mind arising as a response, and you notice, judgmental mind, judgmental thought, 20th already from this morning. and then you think, you know, another one, judgmental thought, number 21. And then you see someone else who says something, and you say, oh my God, they're just, judgmental. Or you see yourself and you think, I screwed up again. Judgmental thought number 23. So that's very much Vipassana style practice, which is one element, not the only one, but it really, really helps to, as part of our practice, to call things by their name and even to give a note. This is a judgmental thought. Hello, goodbye. The deeper place is to see where it's coming from and see that you are, in a way, it's the paticca samuppada, it's the construction of a self, and the self is full of boundaries and fears and challenges, and the judgmental thought is your protection, if you like, your sense of defending something that you believe in, something that you feel is not healthy. It's a defense of the self, and that's a deeper level of awareness. I can see myself reacting in that way and allow that, forgive yourself, say, okay, I see that as well, it's all right. And then even another level is actually shifting the perspective and seeing the other person with different eyes from the Dharma place with compassion. I know it's really, really hard when you're talking about seeing Trump on TV or Netanyahu, how on earth I can emanate compassion. But actually, the Dharma would take you there, because there is... Every human being is struggling to make the sense of their life, and the struggle is yours and mine and trumps and everybody, and you can kind of feel, in a sense, compassion to the struggle of life, which is being manifest at this moment by this person. And you say, you know, there is a place there of compassion. I see you, you're doing the best you can, but if you can, then you can also say some honesty at the same time. It may not be easy. I'll give you an example. Sometimes when I get very reactive right-wing responses, I don't really challenge the views of people, even though I think that they might be harmful, because it just doesn't work. I say, to say you're wrong, then simply they will say I'm right. You're wrong. It doesn't really work. But what you can do is ask good questions. And one of the questions I keep asking people who have strong views that I think are mistaken or not healthy or not kind, or short-term reactive. And one of the questions I would ask is, what kind of seeds are you sowing now? What kind of seeds are you sowing by this kind of view or this kind of action? And it's not easy, but sometimes you can ask a question and have a moment of reflection or have a moment of quiet, saying, have you really thought about that? Is that what you really believe? Or where did you learn about? Is that what you think? Or is that what you heard from others? Ask some good questions instead of being reactive and judgmental. So there's ways to go further with that. And as I say, on the deepest level, just remember the Dalai Lama, when he was part of the whole community, Tibetan community, that was slaughtered. It was basically genocide happening. And thankfully, many, many, many managed to get away into North India. But what he said again and again is, we have to have compassion, because the only thing we have is the practice, the Dharma that we take with us. That's the only thing we have. And that's the only thing we can bring with us. And the Dharma is compassion. Even on the Chinese that killed so many Tibetans, we have to have compassion, because that's the only thing, in a way, that we have and that we're bringing with us. So it's important to remember that we can always go to compassion, even to the person that's coming with a gun to kill us. That's what the Tibetans, that's what they were doing. That may be a bit extreme, I'm sorry, but I have to mention it. We go as far as we can go with that, but compassion is as much as we can. It includes forgiveness to ourselves, that we have that judgmental mind. It's all right. We meet our limits. To be compassion, to have compassion on our limits as well. That's really fine.
Trail a little bit, because what I find happening for me, and this is not as deep as the Dalai Lama instruction, but what I find for me is, even when I think about compassion, I think, but I'm right. That I'm right. Yeah. My view is right, but yours is wrong. So, you know, I hold that, and I believe it times, and I understand at a mental level that maybe that's not so, but there is some place where this self of mine is hanging on to my view, my rightness and your wrongness. And I, for whatever reason, I see that arising very clearly, much more often. I'm not proud of it, but it's the truth for me.
Yeah, I understand very well. It's so classic. It's an attachment that it's one of the four great attachments that the Buddha talked about. Attachment to views, attachment to our rightness is in the center of attachment to the way we look at life. So I won't go again into what I said, but apart from the naming, the Vipassana style practice of naming the expression and the phenomena, we can also be very clear about the way the views come, arise as a sense of defense of the self, and be very clear on the deeper level that this is an attachment, this is how attachment works, and I have the power to be flexible. I have the power to let it go. It's a view, I will let it go. So the step of seeing, even the seeing of the rightness, is the invitation to the next step, which is, I see it, hello, goodbye.
Okay, thank you. And it is something, it is a great opportunity for teaching.
It is.
And it doesn't, for me, it doesn't always happen, but I see that it could happen. So that limits.
Exactly. A bottom line to all of us here, we can't expect to suddenly turn into, you know, angels. Okay? It's just, we can't. But one very, you know, very deep and beautiful understanding of equanimity is it makes things workable. So if we see an attachment like my views are right, it's not that we have to cancel it, because we can't, and sort of wipe it out, because that's just fighting ourselves. But the sense that it's workable, I can work with this. And you're already doing that, and even in the question that you asked and what you said now, you don't always succeed, but there's a sense it's workable. And that's really important. This is not engraved in stone, the attachment. It's workable. It's a flexibility. That's an important quality. So maybe we'll finish by having a short meditation now. It's we have 10-minute meditation, and then we'll just have a few minutes basically to say goodbye and close. So we'll just take a 10-minute meditation just as wherever we are, however we are.